The tour content from now through Lagba Omer has been generously sponsored by Malki M. Thank you, Malki. June is less than a month away, which means that I'll soon be transitioning into summer writing mode, with more Substack articles and fewer recorded shiurim. The bulk of these articles will remain free. However, if you would like to support my Torah and gain access to additional spicy written content, consider becoming a paid subscriber by going to rabbischneeweis.substack.com and signing up today. Hello, I'm Rabbi Matt Schneeweis, and this is the Stoic Jew Podcast, where we explore the relationship between Judaism and Stoicism. Many of you have asked me how my first week of teaching at my new job went, because I recorded an episode 7 days ago on Monday, August 28th, in the parking lot right before my first week of teaching started, and I also posted on Facebook and Instagram about how my first day went, but I haven't really shared any public updates since then, mostly because it's been a very busy week. So I thought I would do that here, and I would do that by reflecting on four passages, minimally, I guess, four passages from the writings of Epictetus. So quick recap of, in case you missed the last two episodes. First, the job. I live in Far Rockaway, New York, but I have a new teaching job at a small community high school, Orthodox school in Connecticut, with 40 high school students. And the plan is for me to teach remotely, to teach two classes remotely, the class is called Jewish Ethics, but really it's Jewish Philosophy, Jewish Ethics, Mishlei, whatever I want to teach. And the plan is to teach it remotely and then to go in once a month to teach in person. And both I and my principal thought that it would be best if I taught in person for the entire first week, because that will establish my real-world presence in the minds of the students and also give me an opportunity to get to know them, which will make it easier once we switch to remote this week. So the plan last week was to go in on Monday for orientation, meet all the kids, and then first day of classes on Tuesday. And I initially thought that that would be it, because there was a retreat on Wednesday and Thursday where they went to a campsite in Southern Connecticut and there were no regular classes. So I initially planned to not really be teaching them, to only really teach them or meet them for those first 2 days. But after speaking with the director of student activities and with my principal, then we decided, I really initiated the decision that I want to just stay there for as long as I can, because my goal is to maximize time getting to know these kids before the remote teaching starts. So I decided to stay, to go on the retreat with them on Wednesday, stay overnight, and then stay for Thursday morning, and then drive back to New York on Thursday. So those are the facts. So I would say that in addition to the thoughts I expressed in my pre-day one recording for August 28th for Monday, I think the overarching mentality that I went into this with was the classic Stoic mentality of premeditatio malorum, of thinking about all the things that could go wrong, all the bad things that could possibly happen, and preparing myself practically and emotionally for those as much as possible. I usually quote from Seneca's statement about premeditatio malorum, but I'm going to quote from Epictetus in the Enchiridion, the Handbook, chapter 21. Let death and exile and all other things which appear terrible be daily before your eyes, but chiefly death, and you will never entertain any abject thought, nor too eagerly covet anything. Okay, so seems a little grim, and I was not thinking about death so much, but just thinking about all the possible things that could go wrong. And of course, when you're meeting new students in general, you never really know what their character will be. And when you're starting at a new job or a new school, you never really know what the culture at the workplace or in the student body will be, especially in a case like this, where it happens to be that there are a lot of, I'm not the only new faculty member, there's a lot of new faculty, a lot of new administration, and so there are big question marks. So I went in assuming the worst and thinking to myself, okay, the worst case scenario is that these kids are going to be, like I mentioned in the Marcus Aurelius quotation from Meditations 2:1, you know, ungrateful, busybody, arrogant, haughty, you know, all these qualities, and that there's going to be misbehaving and there's going to be resistance and rebellion against authority. I basically, you know, I've taught high school for, what is it now? 11 years. Yeah. 11 years of high school. This is, and then whatever. So I've had my fair share of quote unquote bad students. So I went in assuming that that was going to be the case. Thank God these students are incredible. They are so good-natured and nice and personable and not entitled. And when an adult is speaking and they're quiet and they are all good friends with each other, I'm just shocked, maybe because I'm used to the New York schools, shocked to see 12th grader, you know, cool 12th graders deliberately just walking over to mingle and meet and be, you know, become friendly with new timid freshmen, you know, and just all the kids are friends with each other. It's such a great environment. And I made it my goal when I got to the school for this week, I'm saying I made it my goal to get to know every single student by name and have as many conversations with them as possible. And also I sent out a questionnaire prior to last week with, you know, I do this at the beginning of high school classes in general, asking them certain questions about how they feel about the subject that we're about to learn, or their feelings about school in general. But I also decided to ask them questions about personal interests and hobbies and giving them the opportunity to introduce themselves. So I'm only teaching 9th grade, 11th grade, and 12th grade, so not 10th grade. But because the school's so small, I just said, okay, I'm going to try to get to know all the students, even the 10th graders. And that was the goal. And the fact that these kids are so friendly and nice made it so much easier for me to do that. So once again, premeditatio malorum enhanced things. I prepared for the worst and was super surprised and happy that things went so well. So that was the first excerpt I wanted to share. Okay, second excerpt is related, which is from Epictetus's Enchiridion, chapter 17. He says, "Remember that you are an actor in a play of such a kind as the playwright chooses. Short if he wants it short, long if he wants it long. If he wants you to play the part of a beggar, play even this part well. And so also for the parts of a disabled person, an administrator, or a private individual. For this is your business, to play well the part you are given, but choosing it belongs to another." Another with a capital A, meaning God. Okay, so again, this is going to overlap with some stuff I've posted on social media, but I'm going to say it anyway because I want to make a full accounting of this past week. So for those of you who have been taught by me in person or have seen my videos, you'll see that there is a Rabbi Schneeweis uniform. The Rabbi Schneeweis uniform consists of a hat. I know people call it a fedora. I actually don't even know if the hats I wear these days are fedoras. I don't know what the definition of a fedora is, but a hat and a suit jacket and a shirt and tie that usually match the hat. So the origin story of the Rabbi Schneeweis uniform is that when I got my first teaching job, I was 25, or maybe I was 24 when I applied for it, I'm not sure. And I went to give my model lesson, to interview and give my model lesson in the school. And when I was standing there outside of the classroom waiting, then a 12th grade girl approached me and said, "Are you a new student? Do you need help finding your class?" And the reason why is because I looked very young. And so I thought to myself, oh, okay, so this is gonna be a problem. You know, I've seen high teachers who look like students and does not bode well for their presence or authority. So I said, okay, I'm going to wear a uniform. I had a teacher in high school, Dr. Jones, who had a very distinct uniform that he wore of the same color shirt and pants and vest every day, and then he would change on the equinox to a different color. Okay, that's a separate story. But I was familiar with that, the idea of a uniform. So I said, okay, I'm going to wear a uniform that's going to just make me look a little bit older than I appear. But what happened, so that was the reason for getting the uniform. But what happened was that I found that wearing this uniform helped me to maintain a healthier life-work balance, because I would get into my Rabbi Schneeweis uniform, go to school and teach, and then come back and then literally take off the Rabbi Schneeweis identity and become Matt Schneeweis again. And that was ended up being very good for my my teaching, especially because I you know, it's you do want to keep a certain social distance from your students. You know, I was advised by a friend of mine when I first went into teaching. He said, you know, you don't want your students to become your social group. That's not healthy. And for me, wearing the uniform helped with that. So that was the second benefit of the uniform. But the third benefit really is something that I discovered the more I taught. And I think I especially discovered it from parent-teacher conferences and from Meet the Teachers Night, which we would have in the beginning of the year. So I would characterize myself, if I had to choose one quality, I would characterize myself as an introvert. And I'm defining introvert. I don't know what the definitions are out there, but someone who needs alone time to recharge and finds excessive social interaction to be depleting, not energizing. So that's introvert. I'm definitely not an extrovert, but the more accurate term would be an ambivert. Ambivert is someone who has introvert tendencies in certain scenarios and extrovert tendencies in other scenarios. So for example, when I am at a Shabbos table, I, for all intents and purposes, will come across as extroverted. But when I'm at a social event that involves standing up and walking around and mingling, I'm very introverted and I can't bring myself to talk to people. So what I discovered at these Meet the Teacher nights and parent-teacher conferences is that somehow wearing the Rabbi Schneeweis uniform helped me to be able to act in an extroverted manner when interacting with parents. And beyond that, I realized, short time into my teaching, that I need to coin a new term for the type of personality I have, which is, I call it a didactivert, which is if an introvert is energized by alone time or by time with close friends, and an extrovert is energized by socializing, a didactivert is someone who's energized by teaching. So the combination of being a didactivert and then having this uniform really helps me to get into whatever role I need to get into for teaching purposes, for Rabbi Schneeweis. So I found this to be very helpful this past week. I knew that my introvert nature would make it difficult for me to accomplish my goal of getting to know all of the students and all my coworkers and putting myself out there as much as possible. So I thought to myself, okay, this is, the Rabbi Schneeweis uniform is going to help. And I had a brief moment. I wrote about this on Facebook. I had a brief moment of fear because as I was driving to Connecticut, I couldn't remember putting my hat box into the trunk, and I almost stopped the car to check. And then I thought to myself, no, if the hats aren't there, then like I'm not going to really drive back to New York. So I got to Connecticut. I opened the trunk, did not see the hat boxes, and momentarily freaked out. Then I realized that I put the hats in a different part of my car behind the driver's seat. So I was relieved. And that's when it really made me realize, like, what would I have done if I didn't have my hats with me? So, I mean, probably I would have tried to find a hat to buy to be able to have the uniform. But being faced with this prospect of maybe, needing to do the whole Rabbi Schneeweis thing, but without the uniform, made me realize just how much I practically depended on this and how much easier it was to be an actor and to play the role when I had a costume. And now again, this is something where, like, in actual reality, I clearly have the ability to do this without the costume. And this is kind of like one of those Wizard of Oz situations where Dorothy discovers that she had the time to, she had the ability to go home the entire time. I think that's what the plot is. I haven't watched Wizard of Oz in a long time. So I know that I have the ability to do this even without the uniform, but the uniform definitely made it helpful. But that's not the only reason why I'm bringing up this Epictetus quote. So, when I taught in Shalhevet for 10 years, I had a very distinct role. And it was clear to me, it was clear to the students, and I was very comfortable in it. So this, because it's a new job and a new school and new students, I am, the parts of the role are undefined still. And I also don't know in the grand scheme of things, we shall have it. After the first couple of years, I viewed that as, okay, this is my job, and I will teach here for as long as Hashem allows me to teach here. But in this job, I don't know what my role is. Maybe this is just a one-year thing. I can't imagine that it's ideal for a school to have a teacher who's teaching remotely. So I have no idea what the future is, what my future is at this school. And there's no expectations from the kids about what my role is going to be. So I found that like I have to really think about how I want to fashion the role and relate to the role. And I think the muscle, the metaphor of the actor playing a part is a good tool for thinking about this and relating to it in a healthy manner. That I don't know, what is the role of a teacher who is only teaching remotely and then coming in once a month? What is the role of a teacher who is only teaching, I'm only teaching two classes at this school as opposed to the, what was it, 11 courses that I taught at Shahavit, So keeping this, and then there's the idea of an improv actor, where the role is kind of unfolding in real time and you have to fall back on your intuition as an actor and know how to in what direction to develop the role and how you should act this particular scene and how you should respond to this this challenge. So having this actor mentality with the Rabbi Schneeweis uniform actor costume has been a tremendous boon for me, and that is part of what helped me with this this new job. Okay, so that was excerpt number two. Excerpt number three is from also from the Enchiridion, chapter seven. He says, "Just as on a voyage, when the ship has anchored, if you go ashore to get water, you may also pick up a shellfish or a vegetable from the path, but you should keep your thoughts fixed on the ship, and you should look back frequently in case the captain calls. And if he should call, you must give up all these other things to avoid being bound and thrown on board like a sheep. So in life also, if instead of a vegetable and a shellfish, you were given a wife and a child, nothing will prevent you from taking them. But if the captain calls, give up all these things and run to the ship without even turning to look back. And if you are old, do not even go far from the ship, lest you are missing when the call comes." So again, being Epictetus, then he does bring this to talking about death, and the metaphor is you don't know, you never know when death can come, and therefore you should treat it as though you are on shore and always keeping an ear out for whether the captain is calling, and you should go back and be prepared to leave everything if the captain calls. So in my case, again, I was not thinking about death really in this past week in the way that Epictetus is saying, but I was keenly aware of the fact that my time with these students in person was limited. So I knew that I would only be there for this week in person, and then in my mind, I'm thinking, okay, the next time I'm going to be there in person is after Sukkot, which is a month from now, and so I knew I had to maximize time there, and there was always this feeling, I mean, a literal feeling of I'm on this retreat, and like the kids are all there, and they're going to be there for the rest of Thursday, but like I have to leave, and I have to drive back to New York at a certain point, and I'm not going to see them again for another month. So, strangely enough, that mentality of like this is a limited amount of time that I have with them, allowed me to push myself outside of my comfort zone. And I think the two prime examples, well, I guess three prime examples of pushing myself out of my comfort zone. One was making an effort to get to know every single kid. And now, in general, my teaching style is that I try to get to know every single kid. I'm a firm believer in Mishlei's Chanoch l'Na'ar al pi darko, v'gam ki yazkin lo yeser mimena, that educate the child or train the child according to his way, and even when he's old, he won't deviate from it. And the basic understanding of that being that you need to know the human being who you're teaching, the individual, where they're at, psychologically, intellectually, knowledge-wise, and teach to that. And the more you know the student, the better you'll be able to teach them in a way that actually has an impact and lasts. So, in general, I'll make an effort to get to know all the students. But here, I wanted to make sure that I got to know all the students as much as possible in a limited amount of time. This is not something I had the luxury to like allow it to unfold because, let's face it, when you're teaching remotely, you only interact with them in this artificial remote setting. There's no talking in the hallways because you're not in a hallway. There's no hanging out by lunch. So I knew I had to get to know these students as well as possible. So that's why for the 2 days in the school on Monday and on Tuesday, even though I was only teaching a limited time, I made it a goal to be in the hallway or in the lunchroom or with the students as much as possible. I did not even go into the teacher lounge to sit there, but I put myself out there and made it my goal to talk with every student as much as possible. And then on the retreat, I also push myself out of my comfort zone. And ordinarily, if there's a kid who's shy, then I'll just let that kid's personality come out throughout the course of the year and get to know them on their terms. But in this case, I went out and specifically started up conversations with them in order to get to know them. So that was one way that this awareness of the finitude of time influenced my actions and made me go out of my comfort zone. The second way was doing things that were not in my character. So on the night of the retreat, on Wednesday night, they had a kumsitz and something which I'd never heard of called ebbing. I'm still not exactly sure what the difference between the two is, but for those who aren't familiar with the terms, kumsitz is like singing, sitting around and like singing Jewish songs. And the, you know, I do enjoy singing, but my Judaism that I practice does not really involve that. You know, my yeshiva is not into singing. You know, we even have to like, we've had to make an effort lately to do Zmiros because there are some of my Talmidim yeshiva who like Zmiros and I enjoy them, but it's not part of the culture. So the last time I did a kumsitz, I think, was in the one summer I went on NCSY Kollel in Israel in 2001, when I wasn't even Jewish for a year yet. So, you know, it's not just the singing. You're sitting around in a circle with the entire, with all the students, with your arms around each other, singing and swaying, and it's just not my vibe. But I knew that it would be good for my relationship with the students and for the school spirit, and the kids are all really into it. So I did it. I got arm in arm and sang and swayed and did all that other stuff that you're supposed to do in these things. And it was it outside my comfort zone? Yes. But did it end up being good? Yeah, I did that. It was good. And I knew that, you know, this is the only opportunity I'm going to have to do this, so I might as well do it. And then the last thing really had to do with my routines. So those who are longtime listeners of the podcast will know that I have periodic insomnia issues, and sleep is very important to me, especially this, getting into the year. I want to make sure that I get good sleeps. But I knew that at a retreat, then it is very likely to not get a good sleep. The lights out time was called for 1 a.m. After we had the kumsitz, then there was a lip sync battle that the kids had, and then the bonfire started. So it was gonna be a late night. And early on, I said, you know what? I know that sleep is important, but this is one night of sleep. But this is the one night on a retreat that I'm gonna be able to have talking with my students. And so I'm just gonna throw sleep to the wind and get however much sleep I end up getting. But I'm just gonna prioritize staying up and spending time with the students. And so I did that. So again, all of these things, I think if I had known that I was going to be spending in-person time with these students beyond this past week, like a normal teaching job, I don't think I would have done these things. I think I would have retreated to my own comfort zone of my personality, my routines, my habits, and then try to strike that balance of accomplishing my goals, but doing so in accordance with my own personality and my own trends. But because I was on shore and I knew that the captain was going to call, then I made sure to take advantage of the limited time I had with them while I was there in person, and it really did pay off. And just going back a little bit, this made me realize that in the same way as an actor can get a role that does not fit their personality, and through trying to fill that role, they end up discovering things about themselves, latent qualities that they didn't know that they had. I think that had an impact on me here as well. That, like, I'm not saying in a dramatic way, but like just taking the role that I was playing demanded things of me that I myself would not have been inclined to do, and that pushed me to grow and develop. So I think that was a good thing. The very last thing, which I'm not going to dwell on very much because it's very basic, and I'm only bringing this in to unify everything, is the classic Enchiridion chapter 1. On the one hand, there are things that are in our power, whereas other things are not in our power. In our power are opinion, impulse, desire, aversion, and, in a word, whatever is our own doing. Things not in our power include our body, our possessions, our reputations, our status, and, in a word, whatever is not our own doing. Now, things that are in our power are by nature free, unhindered, unimpeded. But things not in our power are weak, slavish, I always forget how to pronounce, slavish, slavish, hindered, and belong to others. Remember, therefore, that whenever you suppose those things that are by nature slavish to be free, or those things that belong to others desires to be your own, you will be hindered, miserable, and distressed, and you will find fault with both God and men. If, however, you suppose to be yours only what is yours, and what belongs to another to belong to another, as indeed it does, no one will ever compel you, no one will hinder you, you will find fault with no one, reproach no one, nor act against your own will, you will have no enemies, and no one will harm you, for no harm can touch you. So again, this is the basic, if I had to pick one paragraph in all the writings of all the Stoics that captured the essence of Stoicism, that would be it, is focusing on what is making a distinction between what's in your control and what's not in your control, letting go of the things that are not in your control, and focusing on the things that are in your control. And I think people who are new to Stoicism will feel that embracing that mentality makes them feel less powerful and more powerless. But what actually ends up happening is by having a clear idea of what is in your control and what is not, it's very empowering. You know, again, in this case, there were many things that are not in my control, that I know I'm not going to be teaching these students in person every day. And so I didn't have control over that. And that made me take advantage of the time that I did have with them. I know that I am not in control entirely of certain aspects of my personality, like, you know, with the introvert extrovert thing. But I know that if I'm wearing my hat, then I can summon the didactivert energy and not be a victim at the whims of my personality. You know, I can take control and do this one tool. You know, I know that if I don't practice premeditatio malorum and think about the bad things that can happen, then I'll be caught off guard and I'll be subject to all these things that I didn't foresee coming. But if I think about what is the worst that can happen and I prepare myself for that, then I'm the one who's steering the ship. And if something bad does happen, then I will have already prepared for it. So I think this just really ties it together. And I think that I don't think I've ever talked about this before, but this tenet of Stoicism of focusing on what's in your control and what's not in your control is ironic, because even though you're realizing how little is in your control, it feels so empowering to actually have that awareness and to be able to act on it and to prepare yourself in that way. So I think that was another lesson I got from this this week. So all in all, the week was excellent. I am now, even though I, again, initially went in prepared, speak of premeditatio malorum, prepared to do my contractual minimum, which is going in once a month and then getting out, I now just want to I want to go in as much as possible to Connecticut and spend as much time with my students, teaching them in person as I can. I am so happy that the year has started off so great. What remains this week is this is the first week of remote teaching. So that will be the final test to see, to get a sense of what this job is going to be like for the year. I know there's going to be an adjustment period. Speaking of things not in my control, I have to, when I am in a class, I'm not so objective about this, but I'm saying this based on what students have told me over the years. It's a very interesting mix because I run a tight ship. I have very clear rules and policies and guidelines and expectations, yet the tone and the feel is very casual and fun. But the point is that I run a tight ship, and I know that if I'm remote, I'm going to have to practice letting go of lots of things. I know there are going to be tech difficulties. You know, I will not be able to stop that. I know that there are going to be, I don't allow students to have their phones out in class. I don't allow them to do other work in class. I don't allow them to eat and drink in class. But I know that even if I say that, then when students are remote, they're going to find ways to do that. Students are going to get distracted. Redirect their attention in the perpetual all-encompassing way that I do when I'm in class. There's going to be difficulties with the artificiality of the interaction, of needing to unmute, lots and lots of difficulties. And so I'm going to need to go into this week with an awareness of how little is in my control, and to, instead of expecting things to go the way that they've gone in my other 11 years of high school teaching, I need to be open to adapting and to accepting the limitations of the format. And that's going to be the only way that I'm going to be able to develop my own remote high school teaching style and be effective as a teacher within those parameters. So that's the challenge for this week. We'll see how it goes. And that is it for today's episode. If you've gained from what you've learned here today, please consider contributing to my Patreon at www.patreon.com/RabbiSchneeweis. Alternatively, if you would like to make a direct contribution to the Rabbi Schneeweis Torah Content Fund, my Venmo is @Matt-Schneeweis, and my Zelle and PayPal are MattSchneeweis@gmail.com. Even a small contribution goes a long way to covering the cost of my podcast and will provide me with the financial freedom to produce even more Torah content for you. If you would like to sponsor a day's or a week's worth of content, or if you are interested in enlisting my services as a teacher or tutor, you can reach me at RabbiSchneeweis@gmail.com. Thank you to my listeners for listening. Thank you to my readers for reading, and thank you to my supporters for supporting my efforts to make Torah ideas available and accessible to everyone.